The following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
From the Associated Press, I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game, a podcast about politics from the ground up. This week, we're talking about New Mexico and how a third-party candidate for the U.S. Senate could shake up that race. We're joined by Santa Fe correspondent Morgan Lee and national political reporter and Ground Game regular Bill Barrow, who is based in Atlanta. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Megan.
We're trying something new this week. We're asking our reporters to bring in something from the ground to a little bit of a taste of the states that we're talking about. So, Morgan, what did you bring us to show off on Instagram?
It's a photo of the oldest house and oldest church in the United States.
In the United States? Oh, how old are they?
They're upwards of 400 years old. They've got thick adobe walls. Some of them are like 8 feet thick. No flying buttresses. Pretty simple stuff. But it's a nonstop tourist attraction in downtown Santa Fe.
Excellent. So they're used as museums now?
Well, one of them is actually sort of like a curio shop. You have to pay to get into the house. But the church is, you know, active, so you can usually get in the door.
Excellent. Okay, so everyone can go to our Instagram account, AP Ground Game, to see those photos. So now we'll get down to business. Morgan, can you talk to us about what's going on in New Mexico right now in this Senate race?
So this has turned into a three-way Senate race. Originally, it was just between the incumbent, Martin Heinrich, who's a first-term Democratic senator, and a Republican challenger who was, he's a novice, a newcomer to politics. He's an Albuquerque contractor named Mick Rich, and he's putting a lot of his money in, trying to spread his name. And along comes Gary Johnson, who's a former governor and was a Republican in the day in the 90s when he was elected twice as governor of New Mexico. And people around the country know him better for his libertarian runs for president in 2012 and 2016.
But he was elected as a Republican.
He was elected as a Republican and later left the fold. And part of that is his frustration at Republicans not being a little more hawkish on things like the federal deficit. That's his sort of trademark issue. He also, in some ways, was cast out of the party because right after being reelected, he came out, and this is in the day when recreational marijuana was still really taboo, especially in conservative political circles, and he said, I'm for legalization. I think it's an injustice that so many people are in jail over possession or repeat marijuana possession charges. And he himself came clean and he openly says, you know, I'm a recreational user.
He says he is currently a recreational user of marijuana?
Currently, yes. And he said the election to Senate wouldn't change that, but that it's, in his words, sort of the equivalent of an evening cocktail. But he doesn't like drinking, and he hasn't had a drink, he says, in more than 30 years. I don't think because of any problems, more just by choice. Yeah.
Just prefers something else. Is that legal in New Mexico now?
It is not technically legal. There's a medical marijuana program and a long list of maladies where you can get a card for it, and it's been growing steadily. It's actually an issue in the gubernatorial campaign about whether those candidates, and there's no incumbent there because the outgoing governor can't be elected to another consecutive third term.
Okay.
So that's a hot issue right now, and it looks like for governor, the Republican Steve Pierce, who's in Congress and running for governor, would not go for it. And Michelle Lujan Grisham, another person in Congress, the Democrat, is saying she wants to go that way of recreational marijuana, as long as there's sort of safeguards for kids not eating edibles and other things like that about safety and health. Yeah.
Okay. So who are the voters in New Mexico?
Oh, so that's a good question. Its registration skews strongly towards Democrats. I think it's about 47% in registration, and Republicans only have about 30%. But at the same time, it's been a purple state for a long time, and the governorship, for example, has bounced back and forth from Democrat to Republican for three decades without consecutive, you know, people from one party. And until recently, it used to have a diverse, you know, bipartisan congressional delegation. That's starting to fade. Pete Domenici and Jeff Bingaman both retired, and they were in the Senate for at least 30 years each. But now it's Martin Heinrich and Tom Udall, both Democrats, and Steve Pierce representing one of the three districts in southern New Mexico is the only Republican in Washington representing New Mexico.
Okay. But it's still sort of a purple electorate.
It is, although there's indications that it may be turning a little more blue, a little more Democrat. The state twice went for Obama, and then Hillary Clinton won by about 9 percentage points. And that 9% was actually mostly Gary Johnson,
right,
since he was running for the president at the same time. And he scored the best in his home state, 9%, even though nationwide he had a lackluster showing because they were hoping to get 5%, where they would start to get major party status and start getting more funding.
Right.
When
you say the state is becoming more Democratic, is that through demographic change or just that's the nature of the state?
Well, I should say the registration is fairly stable. Briefly, 4 years ago, there was sort of a Republican wave. Republican governor was reelected, and for the first time in several decades, the House of Representatives and the State House went Republican. But that has shifted back. The Democrats are back in control of both chambers. They control the Secretary of State's office, the Attorney General's office, State Treasurer. And the only reason the State Auditor is a Republican is because Tim Keller stepped down to become the mayor of Albuquerque. So there's a bunch of Albuquerque switched Democrat last year with that election. So that's the biggest city in the state is now led by a Democrat. And there's indications there may be, you know, sort of pent up Democrats looking, especially in this race for Senate. Some of the polling shows that they're a little more disciplined than the Republicans. And that's a challenge for Gary Johnson as a Libertarian candidate for Senate. He's been able, it looks like, to peel away Republican voters. And he says his natural constituency is the 23%, more or less, of people who don't state an allegiance to parties or with a small third party.
Right. Would you say that voters in New Mexico have a bit of a Libertarian bent in general? Gary Johnson's not a traditional conservative Republican in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's fertile ground, and Johnson has sort of helped build that movement a little bit. I mean, it doesn't show in the registration so much as the way that they embraced Johnson as governor. He talks about his own thought process and just sitting down and looking whether a bill or regulation makes sense, whether it's worth the money, and he really tends to throw partisan allegiances out the window as he's making those decisions. That said, he's a big free trade guy. On fiscal issues, he's a super hawk, and he follows, you know, the libertarian philosophy of having as much freedom as possible on social issues without interfering with anybody's safety or health and welfare.
So, Morgan, what does campaigning in New Mexico look like? What are some unique events and unique things that people do when they're trying to run for statewide office in New Mexico?
There's a lot of time on the road because it's a big square state with tiny populations sprinkled around. Politicians, this is more a state house thing, will throw huge backyard parties where sometimes they'll bury a goat with hot rocks and then eat it afterwards.
I'm sorry, bury a goat?
Yep.
So let's unpack that one a little bit. So this is like some sort of old-fashioned New Mexico barbecue?
Yeah. So that happens. I guess sometimes it could be like a suckling pig too.
Oh, like a luau kind of. Is it good?
I haven't been invited. Sometimes journalists throw me outs. Yeah. And I think they like to keep the conversation flowing freely.
They don't like reporters being there. Goat, that's too bad.
And then unions are active here, both for public employees, for the film industry. The education unions are super active on politics. So they'll have a lot of events. I hit the road with Gary Johnson, and we drove out into the high plains of northeastern New Mexico. And there, I think what's really on display is sort of a lackluster economy. And some of the fading derelict hotels from the Route 66 era. New Mexico doesn't have a lot of jobs available, that it can be a struggle. It's the state with the second highest poverty rate in the nation. And that part, at least, is outside of this enormous oil boom that's going on in the southeast of the state. So there's a lot of contrasts. There's money coming from gas and oil, but there's also a lot of people struggling, and that's something that politicians have to address. Gary Johnson says he wants to, that in order to shrink the federal deficit, he has to address things like spending on Medicaid and Medicare, food stamps, the military. Well, New Mexico depends enormously on the military, on a network of Air Force bases in the south, on the nation's nuclear weapons laboratories in Albuquerque and at Los Alamos, the birthplace of the atomic bomb.
Those can't be popular positions in a state with such high poverty to be against Medicaid and food stamps.
Well, I guess he's testing that equation. He's saying these things, you know, they have to be reworked to become sustainable. And there is also sort of a pioneer spirit here, where a lot of people don't feel like welfare is productive. The Republican candidate for governor is campaigning on bringing work requirements for Medicaid and for nutritional benefits to some extent if it's not a family. So it's a lot of contrasts in that respect.
Sure. So in addition to Gary Johnson's economic and budgetary issues, what are some of the other big issues in New Mexico this year? You mentioned marijuana policy.
Yeah, for the Senate, that's one that Johnson is highlighting. You know, now that other people are coming on board, including his Democratic competitor, the incumbent Senator Martin Heinrich, now says he's in favor of legalization. Well, Johnson's already thinking ahead and saying, well, we have to start legislating pardons for people who are still in jail or may have a black mark on their record for marijuana possession. And he's also talking about dealing with this issue that's probably coming up in states, you know, like Colorado or maybe California now, where people are getting dinged on or fired over workplace drug tests when they're smoking what the state has authorized as legal marijuana.
Okay.
So he's trying to get ahead on things like that.
Is immigration an issue this year?
Immigration's an issue, and Johnson is, you know, pitching himself as someone who's conservative-minded but can also stand up to President Trump on immigration, even though we're in a border state. He's saying the wall is ineffectual. It sends a terrible message. He's comparing, you know, the ICE under separating families to Gestapo tactics. But it doesn't necessarily give him a leg up on a Democrat.
Is that an issue between the Democrat and the Republican? Is the Republican, like, pro-Trump and immigration policy?
In the Senate race, Mick Rich, the Republican, he's harped on sort of traditional matters like drugs flowing across the border. So in his case, he's very closely aligned with Trump in terms of border things. But it's very counterintuitive. I've been talking a little bit about the governor race that's going on in parallel to this, where the Republican is saying, you know, we don't need the wall. We can do stuff with soft tactics, you know, better enforcement and high-tech wizardry that tracks migrants as they come across the border.
Sure, like a more traditional Republican stand.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
And then, you know, in contrast to Johnson, who's saying, you know, we really need to rethink entitlements, all that spending, Martin Heinrich, the Democrat, has sort of cast himself as the defender of Social Security, of Medicaid. You can see him in an ad on the back of a pickup truck in the autumn sunlight, talking to people about this, giving them reassurances. So that's kind of a showdown on that account as well.
Okay, great. I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game. We'll be right back.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game. We're talking about New Mexico and Gary Johnson's third-party run for the Senate. Bill, can you talk about how this plays into the Senate map? There's been a lot of talk about a blue wave in the House this year, but the Senate map is much harder for the Democrats. They're playing defense in a lot of places. How does a third-party candidate who, you know, seems to appeal to some element of voters on both sides change that?
Well, the upfront math is that Republicans have 51 seats, Democrats have 49, a few independents, but they caucus to make a minority caucus of 49. But Democrats are playing defense in a lot of states. They've got 10 incumbents that are running in states where President Trump won. Five of those are states where he won big. So they're having to put a lot of eggs in those baskets defending John Tester in Montana, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, Claire McCaskill in Missouri, states like that. They were not counting on the possibility of having to defend a state like New Mexico.
Right.
Now, they've gotten a little bit of a boost. The flip side is Republicans are having to turn around and worry about Texas and Tennessee. And then, you know, Arizona and Nevada are Republican-held seats that Democrats absolutely could pick up. But this is just the fundamentals of the map started out favoring Republicans. Democrats are in a little better shape than they thought, but all of that is based on not giving up a seat like New Mexico.
Right. Morgan, you had the chance to speak with Johnson, and we have some sound from that conversation. He is talking about using his independence as an asset in the Senate. Let's listen.
Arguably, it becomes the swing vote. Arguably, the Senate is so close that one vote can make the difference between pass or no pass when it comes to legislation. I'm making the argument I'm the guy to be in that role, really. I'm going to bring a common sense approach to everything. Everything that I decide will be based on the U.S. Constitution and common sense, and something that just seems to be lacking today in Congress.
Morgan, how does that play in New Mexico? Are people buying that argument?
Well, he's only come forward with this in the last month. But it does jive with his reputation, which is sort of cheerfully independent, where he says what's on his mind, and sometimes it comes off as oddball. But he's willing, if he thinks it's a good idea, to talk about legalizing marijuana when it was still taboo. That's the one he always comes back to. But he also, you know, would just latch on to new things. He built a bunch of highway projects during his term as governor by creating a relatively new financial instrument where you borrow against future federal highway funds. So I think people do buy that he would, if he's not cast out completely and ostracized, that he would vote with Republicans on a number of issues that have to do with free trade, that have to do with releasing the private sector from onerous regulations, in his words. And then on the flip side, you know, he's on social issues. He's for gay marriage, you know, equality in marriage, a bunch of social issues along those lines. He feels like the government should get out of people's business. So that's where he would come down with Democrats. Now, he is saying, you know, that he's casting himself also as people have to make up their own minds, a nonpartisan person. If the Senate ever comes to a trial over Trump.
He's going there, huh?
Yeah, he's talking a little bit about that. Right now, he doesn't see any evidence of an impeachable offense, but he's not saying, he's saying that he's trustworthy on this, that he can keep an open mind, that he would, put things against the Constitution, and if there were a Senate trial after impeachment in the House, that he feels like he could be fairer than a lot of people on either side of the partisan divide.
What does he say about the court seat?
Yeah,
another federal court seat.
He talks about that as well, and he feels like it's a little nuanced, but he feels like, yes, the Democrats did get cheated out of a court seat, and he said that he was fine with Kavanaugh and would have voted for him before questions about this incident in high school came up, and now he thinks that should be aired out. But on Kavanaugh, I mean, he was saying that before these things came up, that he would have voted for him as someone who's, you know, a strict interpreter of the Constitution, and that people have to take that on face value in terms of his opinion. Yeah.
Bill, can you tell me how that level of independence works in Washington? I mean, if you're not caucus, you know, is a senator who doesn't caucus with either party get anything done?
We don't
need
see
friends,
a lot
right?
of that, do we?
Yeah.
I mean, on the one hand, I guess you could become the ultimate arbiter on certain questions, but what happens? I mean, I'm fascinated by what would happen, and I honestly don't know the answer to this. I think we would have to consult the Senate clerk's office. You know, what happens if we're sitting here short of one party getting to actually form a majority to pass Senate
right.
rules and to pick a – who is the majority leader? Who is the minority leader? And even if that gets easily settled, when you're right at – if it's a 50-49-1 – I mean, this is what
yeah.
we're looking at, and what is does that give then give even more leverage to a Ben Sasse, the Republican who is from Nebraska, who's increasingly critical of the administration, or Susan Collins, the moderate Republican from Maine, who gets a lot of pressure from the left in her home state, and then Joe Manchin, who's sort of the Democratic version of a Susan Collins in a Republican state like
right.
West Virginia. You know, if Johnson gets thrown in with those people, it all of a sudden becomes this, you could call them the leverage caucus.
Absolutely.
You know? But there's no, at least in this era of Washington politics, I don't know that we have a model for this.
So let's be a little bit realistic here, Morgan. We're talking about Gary Johnson because he's a colorful character and it's an interesting dynamic for the Senate. But what are his chances realistically?
The polling that we've seen here so far has him pretty far out, and in one case, in a distant third place.
Okay.
Yeah. So that said, the poll took place. Those polls are in early September. It was mid-August when he put his candidacy out there. He does have almost universal name recognition in the state, and in some cases, fond memories, and oddly, a few hardened enemies. So it is, though, in a lot of people's minds, analysts, a long shot still at this point.
Right. So his role is more likely as one of a spoiler.
Yeah. And the Republicans are calling him a spoiler outright. The state party came out and said, listen, dutiful Republicans do not vote for Gary Johnson, even though he may, you know, hold some of those bedrock sort of conservative budgetary ideals. They're trying to, you know, circle the wagons and cut him out. Nobody is taking their eye off him because he, you know, in 1994 he really came out of nowhere and surprised everybody first in the Republican primary, and then those were fractured times in politics here, and he exploited it really well.
Took it to the governor's mansion.
Yeah, and he hasn't been on he hasn't been on TV yet, and that's supposed to be coming. So,
okay.
And they haven't had debates, and he's a fairly able debater. He. Likes to brag that in his midterm election as governor that he debated his opponent 28 times. And he
Is that true?
Kinda, well, I still have to fact check that. But and he did things that really, he brought out props and really
Oh, right,
better.
The pig. Is that the time he whipped a pig around in the air to show off? Like pork spending, right?
That at the end
a,
of his...
A stuffed pig.
Yeah, it was. I wasn't there, but it was a toy pig on a string, and he's circled it in the air as if to say, "When pigs fly, I'll sign your stinking budget," I think had a little bit too much spending for his taste. And then in these debates, he said he would take out a checkbook as his opponent was talking about his initiatives and tap it on his head and say, "Who, you know, where's the money going to come from?" So those are kind of little tastes of his occasionally oddball behavior. But what has happened is he'll throw himself into public situations that may be uncomfortable and debate freely. Neither of his opponents have been on a debate stage yet. They didn't have primary competition. So in a way, he may perform well there.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. We've been talking to Santa Fe correspondent Morgan Lee and national political reporter Bill Barrow. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game. Our show is produced in Washington by Kevin Vanez. Remember, you can see Morgan's pictures of the oldest house and church in America on our Instagram at AP Ground Game. You can reach us there or on Twitter, same handle, at AP Ground Game. Or by email, groundgame@ap.org. We really do want to hear from you. We really want to know what you think of our project. So please reach out. You can also rate and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Thanks for joining us, and come by next week.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.